Chapter 23. Damn. It surprised me how quickly things moved after the Jarraptha opened negotiations. UNEF showed them a sample of the technology we could offer. In exchange, we were asking for stuff like warships, transports, fleet support ships. Basically everything we needed to jumpstart our own fleet. The truth was, most of the tech we dangled as bait was actually worthless to us because we lacked the manufacturing capability to make any of the fabulous machines Skippy had designed. For that reason, priority number one was to acquire fleet support ships from the Jarraptha. Those ships were massive, bulky, slow-moving, and easy targets in any battle. They were also vital to sustaining fleet operations away from fixed bases. Fleet support ships had fabricators that could crank out many of the spare parts that ships did not typically carry with them. In addition to fabricators, a support ship had hangars full of robotic mining machines that could extract raw materials from asteroids. UNEF was hyperventilating with excitement over the idea of having even one fleet support ship, while Skippy warned that even those ships had a limited ability to make components. For complicated repairs, Jarraptha ships went to space docks where heavy maintenance could be performed. Someday, Earth would have a space dock in orbit. Until then, we needed a basic repair facility. Fortunately for us, the Jarraptha thought the technology sampler package was interesting, but what they really wanted was to see some of the advanced tech in action. UNEF agreed to upgrade 3 Jarraptha ships as demonstrators, with each ship having a range of upgrades. The modifications would be performed at FAB Jaguar, and Skippy would do most of the work as usual. The Jarraptha agreed rather quickly to the outlines of a deal, making me wonder if UNEF could have held out for a better deal. Whatever. It would be Hans Chotek's problem to hammer out the details and make sure we got what we wanted. All I had to do was show up at the signing ceremony. After that formality was concluded, most of the Beatles flew back to their ships and jumped away, leaving a small diplomatic staff on Earth. Oh, I almost forgot. The Beatles also agreed to take care of a problem for us. A problem like a whole bunch of pissed-off lizards, plus thousands more who were still frozen. The crew of the ice-cold Dagger to the Heart had been removed from that ship, most of them still in their sleep caskets, or whatever you call hibernation chambers. The citizens of Earth sure as hell didn't want them, and the ones who were awake were a problem both in terms of security and simply feeding them. Kristang couldn't eat any Earth food. What I mean is they can eat most of our food without getting sick, they just can't get any nutrition from it. To keep the captive lizards alive, laboratories had to make ration bars with the sugars, carbs, and proteins that kept Kristang alive. The process was a complicated, expensive pain in the ass, with the taxpayers of Earth increasingly asking why millions were being spent every day to keep alive creatures who wanted to conquer and enslave our planet. To solve our problem, the Jarraptha agreed to take the lizards and deliver them to a planet controlled by their clan. That plan was complicated by the fact that, thanks to Emily freaking Perkins, the Achakai mercenaries were now a clan of their own. Again, whatever. The Beatles would sort it out. All we cared about was that those asshole lizards were not our responsibility any longer. Oh, another thing I forgot. While we were away, the Dagger had been officially renamed as the Unity. Yeah, that name is kinda lame. Like UNEF didn't make any effort into thinking up what to call the ship. Really, the name was a political compromise, selected because it was bland enough not to offend anyone, and the word translated well into other languages. That's what happens when a dozen rival nations make a decision. What I care about is that UNEF make a good and amazingly quick agreement with the Jarraptha. After the signing ceremony, I was feeling burned out. Like I said, I was at the ceremony to witness the signing of our first agreement with the Jarraptha after Hans Chotek got all the details worked out. I am pleased to say that Hans delivered big time on his first assignment from UNEF. His first new assignment, I mean. The first since humanity joined the ranks of top species in the galaxy. His actual first UNEF assignment, of course, was babysitting me aboard the Flying Dutchman, trying to prevent me from doing anything reckless, like, you know, starting an alien civil war, which he planned, if I remember correctly. Anyway, A Giraptha frigate arrived at Checkpoint Bravo carrying the news that the Beatles would soon be ready to transfer 29 Giraptha warships to us, plus 6 assault transports with a full complement of dropships, plus 4 star carriers, plus 3 fleet support ships, plus an orbital starship servicing platform.
Awesome!
If you think 29 is an odd number, you're right. Why 29 warships? Because the ships being transferred to us were obsolete craft that were so old they had been stricken from the Giraptha Ready Reserve fleet. Those ships had spent most of a century in orbit around an orange dwarf star, slowly turning and tumbling, so one side of the ship did not bake and the other side freeze. The interiors were filled with argon gas and kept warm and dry by solar-powered heaters. There, those ships had drifted, occasionally stripped for hard-to-find spare parts, until parts of that age were no longer used aboard active ships. Originally, the Giraptha proposed to transfer 32 ships, the largest number they could scrape together that had compatible technology, so we would not have to create unique parts for each ship when we rebuilt them. Of the 32, 3 were found to be in such poor condition they weren't even useful candidates for a full rebuild. So, we were getting 29 warships of various classes. The 6 assault transports were not quite so ancient. The Giraptha simply did not often conduct opposed orbital landings and considered those transports to be surplus to their requirements. The star carriers were old, but were still in occasional service when we got them. Those ships were rugged and designed to have long lives. The most valuable items we got from the Beatles were the fleet support ships, with fabricators that were state-of-the-art for the Giraptha, and an orbital shipyard platform. Those fabricators would be used to crank out parts to rebuild and upgrade the obsolete ships to form the beginnings of a human fleet. Thanks to the skillful negotiating skills of Hans Chotek, and I am not being sarcastic about that, our fleet of starships was growing from 2 to 41. Okay, we already had 4 starships, if you count our 2 captured Kristang transports, but their crew jump drives did not have the range to carry them between stars, so I don't consider them true starships. And technically, the 3 support ships traveled with a fleet, so they were also starships. I'm going to count that as 44 true starships that would soon be wearing United Nations symbols painted on their hulls. Human ships. Our ships. What, you may wonder, were the Giraptha getting in return? Our everlasting gratitude and friendship? Yeah, bullshit. The Beatles were not stupid. They were talking about signing on to an alliance with us, moving slowly and cautiously. Like us, the Giraptha were waiting to see how the senior species reacted to humans crashing their exclusive Elder Weapons party. Hans reported there was a brief inquiry into the Giraptha acquiring a few of our ultra-powerful Elder Weapons. They dropped that discussion quickly when he told them those weapons were not on the table. The Beatles were not offended by the immediate rejection. They understood that the more species who had Elder Weapons, the more likely it was that some jackassery or accident would wipe out all life in the galaxy. They were not getting Elder Weapons. They were getting a carefully selected package of information about advanced technology, including how to manufacture gear to deploy that tech and how to use and maintain it. We were even helping them make and install the first batch of those advanced devices, and that is the reason why the fabricators aboard our 3 new fleet support ships were not obsolete junk. Other than a few test runs to make sure the fabricators worked properly, the support ships would be dedicated to making upgrades for Giraptha ships before those ships turned to building stuff for us. The schedule was set up like that not because the Beatles wanted to get paid before they turned the obsolete ships over to us. It was because we didn't want them looking over our shoulders while we cranked out super advanced stuff for our own ships. See, we were also not stupid. The Giraptha were getting access to Maxolk's level technology, but not the cool stuff Skippy had designed for the future UN Navy. The deal was, we would help the Giraptha construct 3 ships to demonstrate the tech we were giving them, ships that the Beatles would test and evaluate before they decided whether to sell us a second batch of warships, and whether to sign a mutual defense treaty with us. My own assignment was to take Valkyrie and the Flying Dutchman to the star system where the Giraptha would formally transfer the ships to us, although that was actually bullshit. The only thing happening there would be us arriving to inspect the ships being offered, then we gave jump coordinates to the Giraptha star carriers that would bring the ships to Jia Yuguan, not to Earth. UNEF Command had decided wisely that humanity should not have all our eggs in one basket, or even two baskets. We needed to have sustainable populations at more than two sites, Earth and Avalon. We also did not want our main naval base at Earth, where the presence of ships and orbital shipyards might tempt hostile aliens to attack. Instead, our small but growing fleet would be serviced and based at FOB Jaguar, which, like Avalon, aliens could not get to. Mostly. Skippy thought the next regularly scheduled wormhole shift would open a wormhole near Jia Yuguan, but that should not happen for a long time, possibly 100 years. He could not be certain about the timing of the upcoming wormhole shift in that sector because the network was refusing to talk to him, and because the shenanigans he did with relocating wormholes might have changed the schedule. In the meantime, a one-way journey to Jia Yuguan from the nearest open wormhole would take even Max Salk's ships 4 years. The place we used to call Club Skippy was remote, located near where the wispy end of the Perseus arm trailed off into intergalactic space. The closest star system of any kind was 26 light-years away. You might think the night sky at Jia Yuguan had a great view of the Milky Way galaxy, but that wasn't true. Being near the edge, the disk of the galaxy was just a streak across the night sky, and there was a lot of dust and gas blocking the starlight. Mostly, the galaxy was a dusky smudge from horizon to horizon across the night sky. It was a nice view, but not awe-inspiring like the view from Avalon, where the Milky Way filled the entire sky. We needed a large number of people up there to train for operating our new ships, then fly them. Plus, the Alien Legion would be based there in the hope that we would sign a mutual defense treaty with the Ruhar and have future missions for the Legion. Plus, FOB Jaguar would become a major star training site. Civilians providing support would be living in tents and containerized housing for a while, no differently from the military personnel. Before we were ready to accept the first batch of ships for our new fleet, we made 4 trips to Jia Yuguan to bring equipment and personnel. 8,000 military personnel were there already. The number was growing each time the Flying Dutchman brought in new people. UNEF had also hired the Sure Thing to transport cargo for us, so FOB Jaguar was growing rapidly. With all the pilots, ship crews, infantry, and special operators on that world, they would need plenty of support. The UN was recruiting civilians to work there on 1-year contracts. That is why I called my parents the next time I was at Earth.
Leave Earth? My mother blinked at me. This is our home.
Looking around the still unfinished kitchen, I pointed at the plastic covering the walls where the old cabinets had been ripped out. You haven't been living here until recently.
We like the cabin.
She meant the 3-season fishing shack my uncle owned where my parents had been hiding out before we returned to Earth. You keep telling me this town is getting too crowded, I reminded her.
It is, she said, while my father put a hand on her shoulder.
She rested her hand over his, and they squeezed gently, reassuring each other. It was nice seeing my parents being affectionate.
Joe, my father looked me in the eye. What aren't you telling us?
Nothing. I have been telling you, telling everyone, and you're not listening. Having these elder weapons is not the end of the war for us. We have been sneaking around the galaxy, running black operations and blaming others. A secret is out now. The war is just beginning for us. I just think you would be safer somewhere else.
My father sat down, still holding my mother's hand. It's that bad?
Shaking my head, I knew they still didn't understand.
Earth is safe from major disasters. I'm worried about the two of you.
Us? Why?
Dad, right now, I'm mostly popular again. That could change, like, I snapped my fingers.
The public thinks we're invulnerable.
Aliens are going to test that, harass us. If that happens, when that happens, I'll get part of the blame. Probably I'll be out there with Valkyrie. You and Mom will be here, dealing with the fallout. Do you want people shaking their fists at you when you're driving, getting in your face at the grocery store?
They didn't need to answer.
Think about it, I pleaded.
Where would we go? My mother asked. The list of people who want to move to Avalon is thousands.
Not Avalon. FOB Jaguar, or you might know it as Club Skippy.
That's the base we're building on Jia Yuguan. Mom? Dad? UNEF is talking about stationing 80,000 military personnel there.
And that's just the first phase.
My father snorted. Son, I'm a bit too old to re-up. Not the Air Force. All those people need support. Contractors. The UN is hiring. Where would we be living? In some crowded tent city? That idea clearly did not appeal to my mother. Maybe at first. Mom, the UN is planning to be at Far Jia Yuguan for many years. We are not shipping all the food out there. Someone needs to grow food. That argument was my ace in the hole. My parents had been talking off and on about being farmers even before we moved from Boston to the North Woods of Maine. They always had a garden, usually way too many vegetables that ripened all at once. My mother canned tomatoes. The last time I checked, they were still using the stuff she canned 3 years ago. Cucumbers became pickles. A shelf in the basement was overflowing with dusty jars of dill, bread, and butter, and other varieties of pickles. The squash we ate in various forms until my father and I got sick of it. They would be just fine as farmers, especially on the UN payroll. Think about it, please. Your sister, she can go too. I knew my parents were hoping for a grandchild soon. If that happened, no way would they leave our planet. Just think about it, please. The UN is taking applications now. My mother squeezed my father's hand. We will consider it. Great. I pointed over my shoulder toward the back door. Make a call. Don't be too long. My mother looked toward the oven where she had a lasagna baking. My mom makes the best lasagna. Stepping outside, I barely had a hand on the phone in my pocket when Skippy called me.
Hey, Joe, I am pleased to announce that your parents have been approved for positions at Club Skippy.
What? Looking back, I saw my parents at the kitchen table, heads together, talking.
They already applied?
Why did they tell—
No, they didn't apply. Not officially, if you know what I mean.
Skippy, my parents will not be happy if I pulled strings for them. You can't scam the UN hiring process. It—
No scam, Joe. Not this time.
Then what? Skippistan is a member of UNEF, dum-dum. I get to bring aboard up to 50 support contractors on the UNEF payroll.
What
do you need contractors for?
I don't, duh.
The UN is funneling billions into the Jia Yuguan project. Allocating support contractor funding is a way for the UN to funnel money to me so it can be skimmed off through creative accounting. I am expected to play along by hiring family members of influential politicians. Most of them won't actually be going off-world, of course, just collecting the paychecks. Anywho, I reserved slots for your parents.
What would they be doing for you?
Geez, I don't know. I'm sure you will think of something.
Me? They are your parents, Joe. Plus, you got me into this whole bribes thing. It's great.
Crap. Okay, do not say anything about it to my parents, okay?
Oh, sure, like you get to be the hero and tell them the good news that I arranged.
Trust me on this, please.
Fine.
He meant it was not fine. That was okay with me. As long as he kept his big mouth shut.
Captain Verena Fonden was irritated when she made an old person grunt while easing her very tired body onto the couch in her office, folding the forward pair of legs underneath her thorax. She hadn't slept properly in several days, ever since she accepted the assignment to spearhead the technology assessment effort for the Jarapta home fleet. The humans were offering to transfer selected technologies to the Jarapta in exchange for starships, large-scale fabrication equipment, and other rather valuable items. The teaser package of technology provided by the humans offered a mind-blowing glimpse into the treasure chest of data they possessed, enough to get Fonden's leadership fairly trembling with excitement. The teaser package was just that. A tease. Just enough to hint at secret knowledge at or above the level of the Maxulks, in some cases even surpassing the abilities of the Rindaloo. Some of the technology was so advanced, so exotic, that it was actually quite useless to the Jarapta. They would not be able to manufacture the necessary components for many years, perhaps centuries. The elder AI working with the humans jokingly said the recipe for an advanced jump drive required 2 eggs, a gallon of zero-mass lanthanum ions, and a neutron star. Fondon seriously hoped that was a joke. She grunted again when she shifted her weight on the couch to take pressure off a sore leg joint. It wasn't fair. She was relatively young, though she had to admit her thorax was a bit bigger than it used to be. There would be time to worry about that later, after, "Hello," a figure said from the doorway, startling Fondon.
"Oh."
Suddenly, she forgot about her aching leg, anticipating much worse pain.
"Ottavio, are you here to ruin my day?"
"Of course not, Verena," Captain Ottavio Scarandum of the Ethics and Compliance Office snorted,
easing onto a couch on the other side of the desk.
"Good."
Verena had a fleeting thought that she could offer the ECO captain a drink, though she didn't have a bottle of Burgos in her desk. Burgos was typically a men's drink. It was much too sweet for her. As she remembered, Ottavio did not like Floon, so she left that bottle in the desk.
"I'm going to ruin your month. Or more. Please."
Fondon's forward set of antennas dipped to cover her eyes.
"What does the Ethics and Compliance Office want with me now? Is this an official visit?"
"Are any of our visits official?"
"No," Fondon sighed wearily. "Can I assume this meeting is not to be recorded in my calendar?"
"That would be a good assumption, yes."
She understood why the meeting with Scarandum had not been listed in her schedule. ECO did not schedule meetings. They simply arrived.
"Fine, then. You were never here."
"Excellent.
How can I make you go away?"
Over the years, Fondon had the misfortune to be involved on the fringes of various ECO schemes, and she had learned it was best to simply do whatever the ethics people wanted, then try to forget about it.
"Verena, I am hurt."
Scarandum tried and failed to appear chastened.
"Somehow I doubt that. Please, I am very busy."
She pointed to the display wall behind her, which was covered with an impossibly optimistic schedule.
"I know. We heard a rumor that the humans are offering to upgrade 3 of our ships as technology demonstrators."
"Yes,"
Fondon answered warily.
"The humans are choosing which technologies to offer. We have only limited influence on the selection."
"Yes, but 3 of our ships will receive valuable enhancements?"
"As a demonstration," Fondon warned, shaking an antenna. "If ECO thinks they can expect significantly enhanced capabilities, they are sadly mistaken. The humans will be merely showing us a sample of the technology packages we can receive if we pursue an alliance with them."
"We understand,"
Scarandum spoke for his office.
"Our understanding is that the demonstrators will be small, obsolete warships."
"Yes, the fleet has suggested 3 ships of the Backstabber class. They are modular and endlessly adaptable with—"
"We would like to offer one of our ships, the rock-solid and suspiciously convenient Alibi."
Fondon blinked.
"The Alibi?"
She struggled to recall. That ship's service must have been long before her time in the fleet.
"I am not familiar with that name. Is it—"
"It's a trifecta-class light cruiser. Or it was before we modified it."
She raised her antennas. The trifecta ships had gone out of service before she was hatched.
"Why does ECO want one of its old junkers to be a demonstrator? It won't be usable as an operational asset."
"We understand that."
Fondon sighed again.
"This will become an official request at some point?"
"It already is, as far as you know."
"Very well."
Captain Fondon knew she would see the request as an unmarked item in her department budget.
"I will have my staff begin work on evaluating a trifecta-class ship for upgrades."
First, she would need to search the database for information on that class of ships. She had only vaguely heard of it. Then, she warily asked a hopeful question.
Is there anything else?
Well, Scarandum grinned broadly in the annoyingly charming way he did. We do have one little request.
All my parents told me was they would consider moving to Club Skippy, although my mother thought that was a silly name. My father asked if there was a brochure, so I know they were at least talking about it. No brochure, I said, but Skippy could show them anything they wanted to know about the place, plus thousands of hours of video we recorded during our visits to that planet. Anyway, we got a signal from Ambassador Chotek that the Beatles had everything ready, so I left Earth again in Valkyrie with the Dutchman right alongside. We met the Girapta at the rendezvous point, had a ceremony with too much drinking on both sides, and then our engineers and technicians went aboard the ships we would be taking, poking around and pretending to open the hood and kick the tires, as if any filthy monkeys were qualified to inspect a Girapta starship. Really, we just wasted time while Skippy examined the ships and declared each one of them to be a totally hopeless piece of crap, but thanks to his extreme awesomeness, he might be able to salvage a few of them. With the inspection over, and me nursing a hangover, we got our little assemble-it-yourself fleet to Gia Yuguan. Then Valkyrie escorted all but one of their star carriers back through the wormhole and returned. Then, the truly awful part of the mission began. Listening to Skippy bitch about all the work he had to do. He complained constantly, and I listened, so he didn't victimize everyone in the star system. After a while, I was able to tune him out, so when I complained back about his complaining, I was faking it. If he thought his bitching was getting to me, he would be satisfied to make me the focus of his wrath. Besides, nothing could bother me much at Fob Jaguar. Why? Because shore leave. Margaret Adams was there. She was part of the Legion advance team. As captain of Valkyrie, I had private quarters dirtside, part of a containerized housing unit that was for visiting field-grade officers. Did I pull rank to get private quarters on the surface when most people were living in tents? Yes. Did I feel bad about abusing my rank? Hell no. I had been celibate for way too long while flying around the galaxy. I needed to make up for lost time.
This is nice, I mumbled into her hair, which was tickling my nose, and I didn't care. Getting her hair away from my nose would mean moving away from her even for a moment, and I wanted to hold her tight against me. Over the years, I had built up a major snuggle deficit, and I needed extended skin contact to prevent serious complications. She mumbled into my chest. Then I felt her nose wrinkle. What?
Your chest hair is tickling my nose.
She shifted to rest her head higher toward my shoulder. Sorry.
You have...
Her fingers were walking across my chest.
6, 7, 8 chest hairs, she giggled.
Hey, we bishop men are not hairy, I protested to defend my lack of hairiness. Except my Uncle Edgar. He looks like a grizzly.
Yuck.
One time at a family barbecue at the beach, he wore a Speedo. She abruptly lifted her head to look me in the eye.
If you want to get me out of the mood.
Sorry, I'd like to forget about that image. She laid her head back down. How's the new team? She raised her head again, annoyed.
Are we talking about work?
Nope. Sorry. Not knowing what else to do, and knowing that my mouth usually got me into trouble when it wasn't busy, I kissed her. She kissed back. That was better. Hey, I whispered a while later. If you keep rubbing that, a genie will grant your wish.
Really?
She laughed. Well, if you keep rubbing, I'll get my wish.
Men,
she laughed.
While Margaret and I were, let's call it, affirming our relationship, Skippy was busy. First, he did a deep dive assessment of our new used ships. Then he tested the fabricators aboard the fleet support ships. Those, at least, he found little to complain about, especially as they could easily be upgraded. The first items the fabricators made were advanced components to modify themselves. When the support ships were ready, we began the process of installing a selected series of upgrades to the 3 technology demonstrator ships for the Girapta. The Beatles, or actually the ECO, had a special request about one of those ships. It was odd until they explained what they wanted,
Then both Skippy and I were pleased to accommodate their request. Being a club Skippy was kind of a vacation for me. Skippy worked and taught Nagatha how to use the fabricators so she could take over while Valkyrie was elsewhere. That was both the advantage and the disadvantage of having a forward operating base that was at the galaxy's edge. Aliens couldn't get there, but neither could anyone else without Skippy screwing with the local wormhole. 5 weeks after we arrived at Gia Yuguan, the three demonstrator ships for the Jurapta were ready, so they were hooked up to a star carrier and Valkyrie escorted that ship back to Beetle territory. No offense to our potential Beetle allies, but we did not want any of them at our forward operating base while we worked on the advanced tech for our own ships. Our ships. Earth was going to have a fleet of warships. Damn. Monkeys were getting ready to seriously kick ass. For once, things were going well for us. For me. General Bailey stuck his head in the doorway of Lynn Besenson's office on Paradise.
Getting a head start on packing?
She nodded wearily, tired of making 100 mostly meaningless decisions about what to take with her when she returned to Earth. Fortunately, the allowance for personal gear was not generous either in volume or weight. She was basically limited to one suitcase of 20 kilograms. Just her officially issued army uniforms added up to more than she could cram into a suitcase, so she would be leaving most of that on Paradise. UNEF would ship it to her when and if humans obtained the transport capacity. I'm trying to set a good example. She shrugged and hung a uniform jacket on a rack.
Don't worry about anything but your personal stuff, Bailey said with a grin.
Oh? She turned and plopped a box on the desk. It was half filled with personal items to be taken back to Earth. Actually, most of the items came from Paradise, or were acquired from one or another planet where the alien legion had set boots on the ground. The small box was depressingly sparse. There was so little on Paradise that she cared to take home with her. All she really cared about was getting home, seeing her family again, seeing the new granddaughter who had been born while she was away. What about... She gestured to the clutter of laptops and other communications gear on the desk.
I just came from a meeting with Patel. Bailey leaned against the doorframe. G2 says the hamsters just approved us rotating personnel here on a limited basis. The agreement states up to 500 humans can come here from Earth to do an assessment.
He used his fingers to make air quotes. Everyone knew that no assessment was needed. Humans had lived and even thrived on Paradise for years.
UNEF will probably send fewer than 500 to avoid looking like bad house guests.
General Besenson stared in dismay at her office. She had assumed the building would be taken over by the Ruhar after the humans left, to be repurposed or knocked down, she hadn't cared. Someone will be using this office?
That's my guess. Bailey grinned again. You're worried about leaving a mess for the next guy?
She nudged a box of junk on the floor so it slid under the desk. I'd like to leave it like I found it.
We found this, he pointed at the floor, in a shipping container.
The entire building was a prefab structure provided by the Ruhar to replace the tents that had served as UNEF headquarters for more than 2 years.
As I remember it, our offices were a mess right from the start.
Due to lack of space, he and Besenson had shared an office for several weeks, a situation made easier since both of them preferred to be in the field.
Lynn, the security people will sweep the place before we leave. The transport won't be here for another 3 weeks minimum. Come on, I'll buy you a drink.
With a frown, she tapped her laptop. I should pull my files off this first.
Everything will be backed up aboard the ship, he pointed to the ceiling. We have plenty of time. I want to hear what you think of this Bishop guy.
Both Bailey and Besenson had been on the planet Tamarin, where the Alien Legion's last mission had assisted one clan of hateful lizards kill another clan until the Maxalts arrived. They had both been terrified of the overwhelming firepower of the senior species warships, expecting death to rain down from the sky at any moment. Then Valkyrie jumped in and kicked ass, and everything changed. In the aftermath, Besenson had met Colonel Bishop while Bailey was still busy trying to keep his people from getting caught in a crossfire between Kristang and Verd Chris.
I only met him for a few minutes, Besenson shrugged.
That's a few minutes more than I had.
She folded the box closed. It could be taped shut later. With a smile, she added, I remember Bishop called me Besenson. Bailey tilted his head. He had always heard his colleague referred to as Besenson.
Why did he do that?
He's from Maine. Besenson is the original pronunciation. My family changed it when they immigrated from Canada. Bishop knew someone by that name from Halifax. One of my distant relatives, I guess.
Bailey pointed down the hallway with a thumb.
Drink?
Sure. She let out a breath. I can't believe we are going home.
None of us can. I won't really believe it until I see my family. Hope they recognize me.
He pointed to the left side of his face where he had taken a hit from shrapnel on Fresno. The Ruhar had patched him up, and he was supposed to undergo cosmetic surgery to fill in the angry scar, but he never seemed to find the time.
We all have scars.
She touched her right shoulder, which had been burned when her starship had come close to being shot down over Fresno. The Valiant ship had managed to achieve orbit, but not before blowing out major systems that caused scattered explosions and fires throughout the hull.
Maybe I can get this fixed during the ride home, Bailey mused, tracing his fingers along the scar, which still itched annoyingly.
She paused in the doorway, one hand on the light switch.
You think we're ever coming back?
Here? He scuffed a foot on the floor. I don't know about landing on this rock again, but the action is out here, not on Earth. I expect UNEF will be fighting somewhere, and they'll need experienced people. You're not planning to stay on Earth, are you?
He asked with a wink.
Oh, Lord, she groaned. Now I do need a drink.